Okay, picture this. It's February 2026. You are staring at your monitor. You've got a coffee that's gone completely cold. And on the screen, there is a loading spinner that just keeps spinning. 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds.
Ah, yes. The universal symbol of, something is terribly wrong.
Exactly. You're testing a price quote for a customer order on the new system you just built. And in your head, you are just screaming. I mean, it is just math. Why is it taking 5 seconds to multiply price times quantity?
Right, if only it were just multiplication. But as we're going to find out today, the math isn't actually the problem at all.
No.
The database is the problem.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We're looking into a technical reference document from February 2026 that's making the rounds in the manufacturing world. And it addresses this exact phenomenon that, frankly, every senior developer eventually slams into face first.
They call it the relational wall.
The relational wall. I love that term.
It's a great term. It describes that specific moment when the database architecture we've relied on for, what, 40 years?
Yeah, at least. Relational SQL, tables, rows, columns.
Exactly. When that architecture suddenly just stops working, it just chokes.
And specifically, we're looking at this in the context of high-end printing and packaging. Because let's be honest here, the days of a customer saying, I want 500 business cards on white paper, those days are gone.
Completely gone. We are living in the era of composable products.
Composable, that's the big buzzword.
It is, but it's really accurate. Customers don't buy static products anymore. They build them. They want a rigid box, but with a magnetic closure and a velvet insert and a foil stamp logo. And this is the real kicker. They want a spot UV gloss, but only on the left half of the lid.
And as a developer, I hear that and I immediately think, okay, I can model that. I'll just make a products table. I'll make an attributes table. I'll join them together.
Sure.
I mean, I've been writing SQL for 15 years. I can absolutely do this.
You can do it, but the relational wall isn't about whether you can write the query. It's about what happens to the performance when you actually run it.
Yeah, that's the painful part.
The document we're analyzing lays out a thesis that is pretty controversial to old school database admins. It basically says, stop using tables for product definitions. It is time to move to a graph.
Specifically, a directed acyclic graph
Yeah.
or a DAG.
Yes. And before everyone tunes out thinking this is going to be some dry math lecture, I promise you, this is actually about how to stop your servers from melting down.
So let's role play this a bit to make it practical. I'll be the senior dev here. I'm skeptical. I love my Postgres tables. I've built a quoting engine using a standard relational model. Why am I hitting this wall?
It starts with what the source document calls the table lookup bottleneck. Let's look at that complex box you just described earlier.
Okay.
To price that, your code needs to know the cost of the velvet, the cost of the magnet, the run speed of the foil
And
stamper.
the setup time for the UV machine, right?
Exactly. So what do? You write a query.
Select star from rates where process I at equals F.
Sure. But you aren't just doing one query because you have to validate the materials first. Can this specific velvet be glued to this specific cardboard?
Oh, right. So that's a query to a compatibility
Yeah.
table.
Then you need to find the machine. Which machine on the floor can handle this exact size box? That is another query to the equipment capabilities table.
Okay, so it's a few queries. That's not terrible.
It's a chain, and it's strictly sequential. The document highlights that for a modern composable print product, a legacy management information system performs between 50 and 200 sequential database round trips
Wait.
just to generate one single price.
200 queries for one price.
Think about the N plus one problem on steroids. You query the bill of materials, you get 20 items back.
Okay.
Now, for each of those 20 items, you need to query the pricing bands table. And for each pricing band, you need to check the customer discount table.
Man, and if the network latency between the app and the database is, say, 3 milliseconds per query,
Do the math. 200 queries times 3 milliseconds.
that is 600 milliseconds.
That is more than half a second where your CPU is doing absolutely nothing. It is
Yeah.
just sitting there waiting for the database to say hello. You are completely I/O bound.
That explains the spinning wheel. The CPU isn't crunching numbers at all, it's just waiting on the hard drive.
Exactly. And that's just the performance side. The relational wall also hits you right in the architecture. We really have to talk about schema rigidity.
Oh man, this is my nightmare. Let's say my sales team comes in, and they always do, and they say, "Great news. We just bought a machine that does edge painting. You know, painting the sides of the business cards neon pink."
Cool feature for the customer. Complete nightmare for your data.
Right. Because now this one single process edge painting has an attribute called color. My other processes, like cutting, folding, laminating, they don't have a color attribute. So where on earth do I put it?
You basically have three bad options in SQL. Option one is the Swiss cheese table. You just add a column called edge color to your main process attributes table.
But it's empty for 99% of the rows.
Exactly. It's null everywhere except for the edge painting rows. It's messy, it wastes space, and it's incredibly confusing for any new dev looking at it.
Option two, I make a brand new table. Edge painting attributes.
Which feels cleaner, right? But now your application logic has to be incredibly complex. Your code has to know, hey, if this is edge painting, join to table B. If it's foil stamping, join to table C.
You're fracturing your data model into dozens of tiny disconnected islands.
Precisely. Which brings us to option three.
Which I admit I have used in the past. The entity attribute value pattern. The EAV.
The kitchen sink. You create a table with three columns. ID, key, and value. And you just dump color and neon pick right in there as text.
Well, it solves the schema change problem. I don't have to run a migration.
But it destroys literally everything else. You lose strict data types. Is pink a string or an ID referencing another table? You lose foreign keys. And your queries become incredibly slow because you have to join that table to itself 10 times just to reconstruct one single object.
So the thesis of this reference document is essentially stop trying to hack SQL to do this. The product is not a table. The product is a tree.
Or more accurately, a graph, a directed acyclic graph.
Let's unpack that for everyone. Most people know generally what a graph is. You have nodes and you have edges. A connects to B. But how does a business card become a graph?
Think of the product as an assembly diagram. You have a root node, the product. It has children, layer one and layer two. Layer one has a child called print process. Layer two has a child called foil process.
So the edges represent relationships like composed of or depends on.
Exactly right. And the acyclic part is critical here. It means no loops. A card cannot contain itself as a component. A laminate cannot be applied to itself.
Which prevents your software from getting stuck in an infinite loop while it's trying to calculate the price.
Yes. Now here is the part that really clicked for me in the reading. The document makes a huge distinction between a simple tree structure and a DAG. Because a tree is hierarchical, right? Parent, child, grandchild. That seems like enough for a box, doesn't it?
You would think so.
Yeah.
But manufacturing has a very specific problem that breaks trees entirely. The document calls it the shared node insight.
Walk us through that.
Imagine you have a multi-layer card. You have a thick top sheet of paper and a thick bottom sheet of paper. In a simple tree, these are two entirely separate branches.
Right. Branch A and branch B.
Now, you need to glue them together. That process, let's call it mounting, physically involves both sheets. It literally sits between them on the factory floor.
Okay, I follow.
In a standard tree structure, a node can only have one parent. So where do you put the mounting node? Do you hang it off the top sheet or do you hang it off the bottom sheet?
If I put it on the top sheet, the system might think the cost only applies to the top part.
Correct. Or worse, you duplicate it. You put a mounting node on both branches just to be safe. But now, your pricing engine traverses the tree, sees two mounting steps, and charges the customer double.
That is the fastest way to lose a bid. The customer is going to ask, why is your mounting cost twice as high as the competitor?
Exactly. In a DAG, however, a node can have multiple parents. The mounting node is a child of both the top sheet and the bottom sheet. It exists once in the data. It is priced exactly once, but it correctly models that it pulls these two upstream branches together into one unit.
That creates a very specific shape in the diagram. The document refers to it as the diamond dependency.
Yes, it's a classic problem in computer science.
Yeah.
The path splits at the root, goes down to two different materials, and then converges back together at the mounting step. It literally looks like a diamond.
And if your database or your pricing engine cannot handle that convergence, if it treats it like a flat linear list, you are going to get the math wrong every single time.
I want to talk about how we actually solve the math for that diamond, but first, the storage question. If we aren't using relational tables, how are we storing this graph? Are we spinning up a specialized graph database like Neo4j?
Interestingly, no. The document recommends the one query strategy using plain PostgreSQL, but heavily leveraging the JSONB column type.
So we are storing the entire graph as a document?
Yes. You serialize the whole configuration, the nodes, the edges, the attributes, the neon pink edge paint, the diamond dependencies. Everything goes into a single JSON object.
This directly solves the IO problem we started with.
Completely. When you want to load a quote, You don't run 200 sequential queries. You run exactly one. Select config from quotes where IDE equals X. Boom.
You have the entire hydrated structure in memory instantly.
Which brings us perfectly to section 3 of the document, the speed unlock. We have the data. Now we need the price. And the document talks about moving to in-memory pricing pipelines.
This is the massive shift from being I/O bound to being CPU bound.
Mm-hmm.
The goal here is to never ever touch the database while the actual calculation is running.
But wait, you need the rates. You need to know how much the paper costs today.
You do. But you don't fetch it line by line during the calculation. The architecture uses something called a pricing context. At the very start of the web request, the system looks at the JSON and says, okay, this job uses paper A, ink B, and glue C. It fetches all those specific rate tables and quantity curves from the database in one massive go and loads them directly into RAM.
So the pricing engine isn't running SQL queries inside a loop anymore.
Zero SQL. It is running pure code, JavaScript, TypeScript, Rust, whatever your backend language is. It traverses the graph entirely in memory. It looks at the spot UV node, checks the pricing context in memory, finds the rate, and does the multiplication.
And doing math in RAM is orders of magnitude faster than talking to a disk over a network.
We are talking about a reduction from 2 to 8 seconds for a legacy quote down to 10 to 50 milliseconds for the graph engine.
That is transformative. That changes the entire user experience for the sales rep or the customer on the website.
It does. But it also enables something called parallel subtree evaluation.
Which sounds incredibly cool.
It really is. Let's go back to our diamond shape. The top sheet and the bottom sheet are independent physical objects until they hit the mounting step. In graph theory terms, they are de-separated.
Meaning they don't affect each other's cost?
Right. The cost of the top paper has zero impact on the cost of the bottom paper. So modern servers have 32, 64 cores. The pricing engine can actually split the job. Thread A calculates the entire top sheet branch. Thread B calculates the bottom sheet branch. They run at the exact same time.
So for a really complex packaging job with, say, 50 distinct components, you aren't waiting for a linear top-to-bottom list to finish. You are crunching it all in parallel.
Exactly. But, and here's the massive catch, what happens when both threads inevitably reach that shared mounting node?
The diamond convergence. If thread A gets there first and calculates the price, and then thread B gets there a microsecond later, do we calculate it twice?
No. We use memoization.
Which is just a fancy computer science word for caching the result.
Basically, yeah. The first thread to reach the mounting node calculates the cost, say $50, and then tags the node in memory. Done. Result is $50. When the second thread arrives milliseconds later, it sees the tag, reads the $50, and just moves on without doing the math again.
It is so elegant. You get the incredible speed of parallel processing without the risk of double billing the customer.
It turns the wild complexity of a custom product into a highly solvable math problem.
Okay, so we've quoted the job instantly. The sales team is thrilled. We won the business. Now we actually have to manufacture the thing. This brings us to section 4. Granularity and event sourcing.
This is where the legacy relational systems really let everybody down on the factory floor. If you look at a traditional MIS, how do they track where a job is?
Usually just a status column. You have a jobs table and a column literally called status. It starts at new. Then a manager changes it to prepress. Then an operator changes it to printing.
And what happens to the new status when you update it to prepress?
It gets completely overwritten. It is gone forever.
Exactly. You are permanently destroying history every single time you update that record. You know where the job is right now, but you have lost all the granular data about how it got there. You can't ask the system, hey, how long did this sit in the queue before someone started working on it?
I mean, you can try to look at a modified at timestamp, but that is notoriously unreliable.
It's forensic guesswork. So the graph architecture proposes a totally different model. Event sourcing. You never, ever overwrite state. You just append to a log.
Like a financial ledger.
Exactly like a ledger. Job created. Prepress started. Plate made. Printing started. Waste recorded. Printing completed. It is an append-only immutable log of everything that ever happened to that order.
And because we are using a graph structure, these events can be surgically specific, right?
Yes. In a legacy system, you just say Job 123 is printing. In the graph system, you say node UV coding front on configuration 123 started at 2:30 p.m. by Appturator Dave.
That is a massive difference in visibility. Now I can answer questions like, which specific machine is generating the most waste on UV coatings on Tuesday afternoons?
You can literally see the heartbeat of the factory.
Yeah.
Playing devil's advocate here, if I am a production manager and I just want to see a simple dashboard of my 500 active jobs.
I see exactly where you're going. If the database has to read 5 million individual log events just to figure out the current status of those 500 jobs, that dashboard will never load.
We'd be right back to the spinning wheel of death we started the show with.
So how does the architecture fix that?
CQRS. Command Query Responsibility Segregation.
A mouthful, but an incredibly powerful concept.
It basically means splitting the brain of the system in half. You have the write side, which is the event store, that fire hose of log data. And then you have the read side, which uses projections.
I really like the library analogy for this. The event store is like the massive pile of every single book that has ever been returned to the desk. It has all the information, but it's a mess to search through.
And the projection is the organized card catalog. A projection is basically a small piece of code that quietly listens to the event fire hose and maintains a highly simplified specific table just for reading. We call it the read model.
So for that production manager, we build a specific job board projection.
Exactly. It listens strictly for process started and process completed events. It ignores everything else. It maintains a super simple flat table, job ID, current station, time started. That's it. When the manager loads their dashboard, they are just reading that tiny flat table. It is instant.
And the CFO can have a totally separate financial projection that listens to the exact same events, but only pays attention to material costs and waste records.
Precisely. You can have 10 different, highly optimized views of the exact same data, all updated in real time without ever bogging down the main database.
This sounds like an absolute dream architecture, but I have to be the realist here. Section 5 discusses the implementation reality. If this is so vastly superior, why isn't every print shop and manufacturer already doing it?
The talent gap. That is the brutally honest answer in the document.
It's just a lot harder to build, isn't it?
Significantly harder. Writing a basic SQL query is a skill that millions of developers have. You can hire a junior dev out of a boot camp to write select star from orders. But designing a distributed system with directed acyclic graphs, event sourcing, and CQRS, that requires domain-driven design.
Right. DDD, that is elite-level systems engineering.
And debugging. Oh, man.
Oh, the debugging. In a legacy system, if a price on a quote is wrong, you look at the row in the table. You say, oh, the price is 5, it should be 10. You run an update query. Fixed. Done.
Out of here.
Here, if the final price is wrong, you have to trace the entire graph traversal. Did the memoization cache grab stale data? Did the projection fail to update from the event store? Was the price and context loaded with last week's version of the rate curve?
The debugging surface area is just huge.
It is. You need much better monitoring tools, incredibly detailed logging, and frankly, you just need smarter, more experienced developers. This is not a low-code drag-and-drop solution.
There is also a stern warning in the document about the kitchen sink anti-pattern.
Yes. This is where developers try to adopt the graph, but they bring all their bad relational habits with them. They create a generic node called process, and they just give it 50 optional attributes. Ink color, foil type, glue temp, fold angle.
So you're literally just recreating that awful EAV mess, but inside a JSON document now.
Exactly. You lose every benefit of the graph. The real power comes from strict typing. A printing node should have totally different data properties than a shipping node. Mm. If you blur everything into a generic blob, you're just building a slower, more complicated version of what you already had.
The document provides a litmus test for when to use this graph architecture versus a standard relational database. I think this is really important to highlight because we aren't sitting here saying kill SQL, are we?
Absolutely not. SQL is a miracle technology. The rule of thumb they give is this. When you load the data, do you need the whole unit?
Like the entire product configuration for a quote.
Right. When you are pricing a complex job or manufacturing that job on the floor, you need the whole context. Every single layer, every instruction, every dependency. That is a pure document or graph use case.
And what's the relational use case?
When you need to slice data across thousands of disparate units, find me all jobs ordered by customers in Chicago this month. Or find me the average profit margin for jobs that used 300 gram paper.
Because in the graph model, that specific paper data is locked deeply inside thousands of individual JSON documents.
Correct. You do not want to iterate through 50,000 massive JSON blobs in memory just to calculate a simple average. That is exactly what relational tables are designed to do fast.
So the ultimate architecture is actually a hybrid.
It's a hybrid. You use PostgreSJSON-D for the configuration, the deep, complex graph part. And you use standard relational tables for your customers, your invoices, and your high-level analytics.
And to actually get there from a legacy system, The document recommends the Strangler Fig pattern.
Which is honestly my favorite migration strategy name in software.
It sounds incredibly violent.
It's botanical. The Strangler Fig tree grows slowly around a host tree in the rainforest and eventually replaces it entirely. The idea in software is, do not try to rewrite your entire ERP system on a Monday. You will fail.
So what's the actual path?
You build the graph configuration engine first, just that one piece. Let it handle the new complex data structures. Pass that flat data to your old legacy pricing system if you have to. Then, once the graph is stable, you build the new in-memory pricing engine. Then, maybe a year later, you add the event sourcing for the factory floor.
You literally strangle the old system piece by piece until the original MIS is just an empty shell.
It is really the only safe way to perform a heart transplant on a factory that is running 24/7.
So let's recap this whole journey. We started at the relational wall, a world where a luxury composable business card triggers 200 sequential database queries, takes 8 seconds to price, and forces you to store data in rigid, sparse tables.
And we move to a world where that exact same product is modeled as a directed acyclic graph. It's stored in a single JSON document. It's priced in milliseconds using parallel in-memory pipelines. And its production is tracked with forensic precision using immutable events.
It is a massive, massive paradigm shift. But given how complex modern manufacturing is becoming, it feels completely inevitable.
It is inevitable. Complexity is the single direction of travel in this industry. You simply can't fight physical complexity with simple flat tables. You have to match the shape of your software data to the actual physical shape of reality.
I love that. Match the shape of the data to reality. I want to leave our listeners with one final thought, something to really chew on after the episode. We talked heavily about the diamond dependency, that shared node where two branches converge.
Ah, my favorite geometric puzzle.
I want everyone listening to think about a sandwich.
A sandwich. Okay, I'm with you.
A sandwich is a graph. You have the top bread. You have the bottom bread. In our model, those are parallel branches.
Sure, they are prepared separately.
Then you have the assembly step. Putting the ham and cheese in the middle and closing the sandwich, that assembly step physically depends on the existence of both slices of bread.
Right. It's a perfect diamond dependency. The assembly is the convergence point.
Now, imagine you are modeling this sandwich in a simple legacy tree structure. You have to put the assembly cost, the actual labor cost of the worker making the sandwich, somewhere in the tree, if you attach it strictly to the top bread node.
Oh, I see it. Then if a customer orders an open-face sandwich, meaning no top bread, the system removes the top bread node and poof, the assembly cost completely disappears from the quote.
Exactly. The system stupidly thinks no top bread, no assembly required. But your worker still has to butter the bottom slice and arrange the ham. You just gave away free labor because your underlying data structure was a tree, not a graph.
That is the absolute perfect example. The diamond dependency isn't just some abstract computer science theory. It is the literal difference between pricing a sandwich correctly and losing money on every single lunch order you take.
Structure dictates strategy. And on that delicious note, we will wrap up today's deep dive into graph-based product configuration.
If you want to really nerd out, check the show notes for the architecture decision records from the original source document. They are an absolute goldmine on the code versus database debate.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We will catch you in the next deep dive.